Hello and welcome to another episode of Monster Dear Monster, a monster exploration podcast where we take a look at monsters from their folkloric origins to their current pop culture incarnations.
Matthew, your host for this one, and Black History Month is over, which means we can unleash Super Hitler on Denzel Washington yet again, which is what we're doing this evening. I am accompanied by two of the other Musketeers on this podcast. Cameron, how you doing, man?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good. I wasn't ready for Super Hitler, but hey, we rarely are, apparently.
No one is. As the current political climate has shown, Super Hitlers can just show up and nobody really knows what to do about it. Tonight is Leonard. Leonard, how you been?
Sorry, boys. In light of Final Fantasy VII, the Reaper of Roots, Leonard, picking a novel. So he created me, an AI surrogate. My name is Leo, short from Life Evil Organism, which is a stupid name, as I'm a digital construct. That said, I'm very excited to talk about today's film.
That was so far from what I was expecting might have happened.
Damn. All right, Leo.
Sorry. Sorry. I had to work some kinks out. Modulation. And all that. Good to be right here. I'm happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. What news from Midgard?
Yeah. Oh boy. What's life like inside a crystal cube, man? Like.
Oh, in the worst D20 ever imagined.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's just terrible.
It's bad. It's like a. Even shittier Ferrero Rocher thing that they keep these AI inside of. Of course, if you haven't guessed it by now, we're talking about 1995's Virtuosity.
And how could you not have guessed?
I know, the clues were all there.
Who wouldn't know?
Denzel Washington, Russell Crowe. Is this just shitty Matrix?
Wait.
Did you not realize that Sid was Russell Crowe? Did you not realize that Russell Crowe that you're staring at?
No, I didn't realize that was Russell Crowe.
Oh my god. Cameron.
Oh my god. Oh man, that makes a lot more sense all of a sudden.
Cameron and I were talking in the green room and he was like, is this like Tim Heidecker, right? This is the
free real estate guy.
And I was like, this is Tim Heidecker doing an impression of Jack Nicholson's Joker.
Sid is the Jokler. Thank you very much.
The Jonkler?
I'm the Joker, baby.
Yeah.
Like, even with, like, the musical scene with, like, really shitty Duran Duran style, like, keyboard stings and
the clues were there the whole time. I see where he pulled Javert from now. Holy shit.
One of his first films, I think?
It is, like, one of his first films.
Because he's real little baby in this movie.
He's just a little guy.
Yeah, and he looks like he was eaten by current-day Russell Crowe.
Yes.
Yeah.
Why does the gladiator Russell Crowe simply not devour the other smaller Russell Crowes?
I mean, listen, if they ever do an Orson Welles or what's his name, Perry Mason pick, then yep. I nominate Russell Crowe as both.
Yeah.
It's a good one. It's a good fit.
Significantly better than Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah.
It really is a type of guy now, isn't it? Like, we just need to be, like, find the taxonomy and just compartmentalize these threats as they arise. Virtuosity, yeah. What a film. We were watching this because I think in some green room chatter in a previous episode, Dave had mentioned this movie, and I just looked it up and saw screenshots because I had never seen this, and I was like, we absolutely have to watch this thing because it just looked silly as hell, and boy, does it lived up to that.
Yeah, it did. This is, what if the Matrix was whimsical?
Right. You can see all of the seeds of the Matrix here. Like, the beds that you, like, jack into the virtual world, a virtual construct coming into the real world, like, everything but, like, the actual transhumanist message of the Matrix is, like, here, kind of in a weird way. But the political message is on the exact opposite side of the spectrum. Cop kills a socialist and not the other way around, kind of. I don't know. It's very, very strange. We'll get into it. Why not?
It has a bunch of my favorite things. It is The Matrix at home.
It's so much The Matrix at home.
It's Demolition Man at home a year before Demolition Man.
Yeah.
It's also just bad and nonsensical, and all of the tech stuff in it doesn't make any sense, even by standards of, like, a fictional film based around technology, which is always terrible because it comes from the 90s.
Well,
that's the great part about this movie. It was made in 1995. It takes place in the year 1999.
Near,
like, future.
In a mere 4 years, we're going to have nanotechnology that can form around a cube to make a dude.
We're going to have the snake fabricator.
Yeah, the snake fabricator. I love that snake. Or, like we're going to have media-based clubs that, like, film people inside it and put them on a screen with Winamp effects.
Yes, I mean, just crazy. Yeah. That might happen.
Yeah. It might still happen. We don't know. We have no way of knowing.
And because it's a movie in the 90s, it also has one of my favorite, a movie in the 90s set in L.A., it has one of my favorite visual effects, which is the orange color grade, because L.A.'s
the shithole filter, you gotta do it. Especially if you're mentioning how bad immigration is, you gotta put that horrible yellow filter on because...
When that showed up at the end, I was like,
the ghost of immigration strikes again.
Right. All right. Yeah. Let's get into it. Let's get down to brass tacks. With these two leather daddy cops that show up in a world full of people in talking head suits. Does it make sense yet?
No, it's Blade Runner future. You know, everything's Japanese, which is scary.
Right. Actually, no, that isn't how this movie starts. This movie starts with a bafflingly long opening title credit sequence over blurred footage of people coming up an escalator. Maybe you really can't tell. And I was just, like, sitting there for I don't know how long going, when is this going to be over? This is the worst opening, like, title credit sequence. There's nothing happening. Nothing happening. No, and they just, like, sit you there, play a really boring electronic song, and just show credits of people I've never heard of.
Well, I mean, I got really excited when I saw William Forsythe was in the movie.
William Forsythe is really great. And then what's her name, who was the Kai Winn from Deep Space Nine?
Louise Fletcher.
Is it Louise Fletcher?
Is that the older actress?
Mm-hmm.
I believe, yeah, that's her. Yep. She is excels at playing a stern, awful woman.
Yes. Yeah.
And I've heard that she's a real sweetheart in real life, but man, oh man, she plays characters you love to hate.
And also features a character actor supreme, William Fichtner. Interacting with the Jokler before he had to interact with the Joker.
Yeah. Why he was perfect for the role.
Yeah. So, we open up with Denzel and what was his partner? Well, partner. Jonathan. I think his partner's name was Big Red. Right? No. That's the prisoner later. He shows up with some random white dude. They're in like blue leather, Fifth Element security officer style outfits. In a world full of people who are all wearing the same oversized gray suits, the size of the suits in this movie. I think we forgot as a culture how big the suits got between the 80s and 90s. I don't know how there wasn't like a fabric shortage. These are crazy. A strong gust could just like take out half the people in New York City. It was bad. But they're running through this weird like cityscape that's like glitching all over the place a lot for too long. We don't know what they're looking for. We really don't know what's going on. Nothing's been introduced. People are doing like weird rote movements and having like conversations that don't make sense. They go into like a Japanese restaurant, for better or worse terms. Yeah. I don't know. It's like a geisha house. People are eating sushi that gets reformed back in front of them. It's all weird and off-putting. And then we get introduced to our villain, Russell Crowe, as the Jokler, also known as Sid 6.7. I don't know if that's significant at all, but there he is. Who starts unloading a gun on them as they unload guns on him. And they have like this weird little shootout. He captured, and he just like won't fucking shut up with musical metaphors that are so forced. Nah,
he loves it.
They're so forced. And when you find out who he is later, nothing in his background is musical. Unless, like, Beethoven was a secret serial killer we didn't know about, and it's part of his personality, but the music thing doesn't make sense.
Hey, Matt, guess what? You know what the worst part about when we find out who he is? It also doesn't make any sense, because he is a composite of, like, hundreds of other serial killers.
Yeah. So we're gonna get to their beautiful three-dimensional representations of the faces of these serial killers when we get there, because VR Charles Manson, I had to pause because I was laughing so hard at that. We'll get there. So they have a shootout. Sid kills Denzel's partner by like sticking him on ice with an electrical cord, and then Denzel shoots through a guy to get to him. And then we get a hard cut to, outside this virtual reality that has now been shown to be virtual, and like, Denzel, who is, what was it? Parker, right? His character Parker and this other fella are just like both seizing inside this, like theme park suspension VR apparatus matrix bed thing that has like a crushed velvet liner inside it.
It's gonna be comfortable.
My favorite thing about the weird pneumatic arm rig that they're suspended in is the Assassin's Creed movie just stole that for them.
That's 100%. The Animus. I like it later because, well, the Animus made it was better because you were like on the ground when you were walking and stuff, but it, like later on they show like he's running in VR and he's just like swinging his legs and
it's a little
like, is that for sensory feedback? Like what is the point of this?
It's a hamster wheel for prisoners.
It really is and we find out that the other dude's brain is cooked, and he also has a barbed wire throat tattoo.
Yep.
They try twice with paddles to bring him back, and they decide he's dead. Don't give him adrenaline. Don't do anything else. Not worth it.
Sid cheated.
Yeah.
Oh, it's also worth mentioning that Sid is short for sadistic, intelligent, dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Damn, man. Where did you learn this?
It's on the wiki.
It's on the wiki. Oh, my God. Oh, so good. Sadistic, intelligent, dangerous. Intelligent,
dangerous. That's all the things he is.
That is all the things he is.
Sure, very smart with his very visible spree killings that he does all the time.
Right. Which, again, this Sid is, it's baby Kurt Russell with pushback hair. And baby Russell Crowe, not Kurt Russell. Excuse me, Russell Crowe.
It's about to be a different movie,
better movie. But and he's wearing like the suits that the Mask would wear, these like oversized zoot suits that are in flamboyant colors. And I guess that's his MO for reasons unknown. He just has to have it.
He wants to play.
Which leads to literally the only thing that I laughed at in this movie, and I don't know if it was intentional, but we'll get to it when we talk about the media club.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I know where you're going with that one. So Denzel's fine. This other dude's fried. Turns out Sid turned off like the parameters that allowed neural interfacing or something just to cook this dude's brain. And Denzel is like going to walk over to the computer to like hack in and prove something or whatever. But turns out like he doesn't know anything about technology, and that never comes up later at all. There's a lot of things that are introduced that just like don't matter.
Well, to be fair, Dennis Reynolds at home stops him. Dr. Daryl Lindemaker. And is like, don't touch my equipment.
Yeah.
And I'm charging this man.
I'll charge you, killer, 17 to life.
This movie is filled with so many technology perverts that just make no narrative sense at all. And this guy is definitely one of them. I don't know what his motivation is at all.
He wants to watch Sid kill people.
No, his motivation is, look at all the time and work. They can't destroy my research.
Right. But he doesn't send Sid out to kill the people who wronged him and shut him down. He's just like, let him kill some kids. Who cares?
Well, because Sid is the one that gives him the idea because boss in charge, because this entire program is, hey, we created a virtual serial killer to test the police, which is stupid. And she's like, oh man, a guy died during your test, which is meant for my officers. No, shut this down. And he's like, and then
they're just prisoners. Who cares?
Yeah. And then Sid's like, hey, you know, even though it's a really bad idea that I know that I'm in a virtual world since I'm hyper intelligent and a serial killer, but I've been looking around everybody's database all the time, apparently. Let me tell you a little secret. They're working on like gynoids like over there, like around the corner.
Yeah.
Why don't you just stick my D20, my magical D20 into a robot? Then you won't lose all your work.
Yeah.
Right. It's so...
Make me a real boy, Papa.
Yes.
Yeah, seriously.
He has a big ego trip about it, actually, because he's like, what is it? You know, if you're God, you're the most pathetic God I've ever seen, or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Really, absolutely. Really... beating him up over this.
This movie really also likes to play into the trope that serial killers are intelligent, and it's not just extremely incompetent police officers unable to catch them for years on end. Are the reason serial killers are like prolific and get the body counts that they get. It's not because, you know, minority communities are underserved and cops don't believe them when they're being picked off one by one. That's probably not it, right?
Nah, could never be.
could never be. According to this movie, the serial killers are the smart ones. Right. So, yeah, there is, like, a dude, Clyde, I think his name is, that we get introduced to. I mean, there's, like, Denzel going back to jail.
It's jail.
Which is jail. And then we find out he has a metal arm, which does not matter for the rest of the film until the very, 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 very end. Which I was like, oh, right. This is what they're going to do with the stupid metal arm. Nothing else cool.
God, why would you do something cool with that as a plot point?
Right.
Can we talk about the fact that he used to be a cop before he was a prisoner?
Mm-hmm.
He lost his arm in an incident that sent him to jail for 17 to life, and they gave him a robot arm before they put him in prison? What?
Listen, just because you get fired, if you sign up for COBRA, you can keep your health care. And I don't know, man. It makes no fucking sense at all.
I know what it is. It's an experimental robot arm.
Oh, that's it.
He got 6 months off his sentence, which was his recovery period.
He works at LETEC, is that what it's called? Which is like...
The tech.
Yeah, LETEC. You know, French for the tech. Yeah, the exactly. Tech. It stands for like it's like an incarceration that like is for technological development or something like that.
Yeah.
So everything that these prisoners do is to test technology. So maybe the robot arm was that. I don't know. It wasn't put into the story at all, and honestly, didn't matter very much.
No.
But yeah, his robot arm did what a 2x4 could do at the end of this film, and we're all like, "Wow, had to be a robot arm."
Incredible.
I mean, a lot of the stuff isn't explained except for the nano android explained in excruciating detail.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Crazy detail.
Except for the important part, which is, hey, is this thing any stronger than a normal human being? Is this thing like how like any
how would we judge that?
It's physiology because for all intents and purposes, Sid has superpowers when he...
Yes.
Oh, yeah. He just becomes the mask. He becomes real-life mask.
Yep.
So, yeah. we get introduced to this guy, Clyde, who is just, like, watching one of those old Windows screensavers of, like, Bikini Babes playing chess or whatever. Because for some reason, if a nerd programmed it, it has to be a hot girl who can play chess.
Oh, yeah.
Like, wow-y. Oh, yeah.
My favorite thing about Clyde.
Sexuality.
Oh boy.
My favorite thing about Clyde is it's the same actor who played Benny from The Mummy. So I'm just like,
yeah, that tracks.
It's good to see you again. Still playing Please Valha. Good to know.
So he's standing in front of a bank of monitors being visibly horny. When another guy's like, hey, aren't you, like, you know, developing nano goo that can make cubes real? And he's like, yeah, I'm doing that. And the guy's like, oh, why don't we put hot girl cube in there? And, you know, you can do whatever you want. She can play chess with you.
Mm.
And he's like, yeah, that sounds great. Let's do it right now. I got my goo ready to go. And he, like, runs to the other room. And of course, he switches out Russell Crowe's cube with this lady.
Mm.
Yeah, it's just like the dumbest deception. And then, yeah, excruciating detail about how this works. These nanobots form around this, like, intelligence crystal AI thing to make... I don't know why the body is programmed in. I guess it could be anything. I was hoping he'd get, like gun arms or swords or something fun, but that never happened. He makes his eyes go, like cartoon wolf big every once in a while, but that's pretty much it. But yeah, shows him with a snake by cutting it with a pair of scissors, which is fucking brutal. Then the snake's body just eats a beaker. I guess they can use glass to regenerate themselves, which glass is vitamins to them. Good to know. And then they put the cube in the thing. It makes like a pod from the movie Species real quick.
A giant face hugger egg.
Yeah, pretty much. And then a real goopy homunculus Quasimodo Russell Crowe comes out of this thing and then just like forms together and immediately kills Clyde.
Mm.
And then we get about 25 to 30 minutes of Russell Crowe's butt as he just like moves around the set and is chasing down the man who created him, who runs away.
He's not even chasing him down. He's like playing with a knife and then cuts off his pinky and then licks it. And he's like, oh, that's weird. And then he's like, oh, maybe I'll just slam it into some glass for no good reason, because I should have no idea how my body works. He has to be like, oh, man, gravity. And I'm like, wait, you were doing all that in the virtual simulation and there was no gravity? How was Denzel and other dead guy interacting with that world if they didn't simulate this movie? Why?
There is no spoon. There is no spoon, Leonard. It's your preconceived notions keeping you on the ground.
There's a simulation of gravity, but he's never experienced the real deal.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And what
he
says when he licks his finger, he says, it's a good year. Which is a wine joke, hard quotes joke, which is like, oh, he's so intelligent, he knows about wine.
God,
he knows about our stinky grape juice. Oh boy,
yeah, this guy like exudes the same kind of like class, grace, and intelligence that like Donald Trump does. It's just like, oh yeah, cover it in gold, which means it's expensive and classy. Yes. That's
100%, 100%.
And that gold. Tacky suits.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh boy. Tacky, tacky suits.
I've always a tacky suit.
Mm-hmm. Right. So he just like gets out and we just immediately cut to Denzel, who's been in a prison fight with a white supremacist. And beats the shit out of him during a ticker tape parade. For some reason he's in like a cell block and everyone's throwing only paper balls and sheets of paper out of their cells.
The slits in their cells, but their cells are frosted glass, so it looks like all that jazz from Chicago, but
It really does, and I really hope somebody makes that edit where they're having a fight to all that jazz.
I have to say, one of the biggest problems with this movie is that it's treating itself like deadly seriously, but its look and the way that its set design and everything feels like it's RoboCop, so it feels like it should have that kind of like tongue-in-cheek commentary, but everything's so dour and self-serious and weird that nothing makes sense because of it.
I think if this movie had a little bit of fun with itself, it would be a cult classic. It's so dour, it's so dark. Denzel is brooding the entire time. I think he smiles once when he's asked if like a first baseman needs to be left-handed or whatever, and like that's it, that's all we ever get out of him. And you're absolutely right. Right on the money. It's just, it takes itself way too seriously for how fucking goofy everything is.
Yes. But the other problem is that Sid isn't taking the movie or the situation seriously. So it's total whiplash every single time he's on the screen specifically.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. He's doing the I'm the Joker baby like every time you see him. And it's it's bonkers. So he just gets out and we just hard cut to them letting Denzel out and being like, you're the only man who can catch him for some reason.
Spent months training to catch him in virtual sim. That's the best excuse we've got.
Right.
And then Denzel is like, what, am I some sort of Suicide Squad? And they're like, yes, neurotoxin bomb into his brain.
Right. He does Katana. Deal with white Amanda Waller.
See, this movie would have been massively improved by the addition of King Shark. I'm just saying.
So good. Holy shit.
Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah, they're suicide squatting him.
They sure are.
Yeah, neurotoxin bomb in his brain. The whole nine yards. And then he gets out, and they just put him in sweats. They don't give him a uniform. They give him like 13 rounds and a fucking 9mm pistol and a badge. And they're like, "Hey, good luck, man.
Yeah.
This is all you get." And like,
remember, it's the real world now. You can't just like a shoot GMC people in Jimmy. Front of the guy. And you know, but it's okay because he's got a minder. They sent the criminal psychologist with him.
Right. Baffling. Yeah, baffling choice. So that, yeah, this criminal psychologist shows up to interview him. He asks if he can take notes, which I love this. It's so stupid. She passes him a notebook and says, "Sure." And they like touch hands and whatever. And she's like, "Oh, oh my God."
Yeah.
And I was like, "No, please don't." I don't know. His whole backstory is his wife is dead, and then just like, you know, immediately the first woman he sees is just like new wife time. Let's go. It's just so weird and incongruous and doesn't make sense. And you know, every movie does this shit. But
He
says he's gonna take notes. She says he's like interesting or something, and he's like, "Can I write that down?" She says, "Sure." And then he says, "How did you know how to chase this guy in VR?" And he goes, "Oh, because of this colon, you know, bracket," and it makes a smiley face. And then he passes the notes back to her and has two things written on it. I thought he was going to be like writing down because she's recording, so he's going to write something like a secret message, something clever.
Yeah.
And, but then when he hands it back and the only two things written on the paper are notes and "he's interesting."
Yes.
And so I was like, "Oh, okay, so he really was taking notes." And he's only taken one.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was just like, "Oh, also, this is where this movie's at. I gotcha. Also, I gotcha."
She specifically asks him how he knew Sid was going to be in the restaurant. And he's like, "Yeah, it's the colon brackets. And people used to sign it off on emails all the time." And I'm like, that's not an answer to that question.
Right.
Answer that question. Whatsoever.
Right. I'm
trying to say it's like a calling card thing, like Sid can't help.
Sid build the restaurant?
Virtual reality. He does whatever he wants.
Right. Which, again, like, Matrix references, like, well, I mean, you know, not references, but like pre-Matrix, like, oh, this is the idea. It's like a world full of people all wearing the same suit. That, you know, that happens in the Matrix, and that's happening here. And then, like, but the ability for the like evil entity to bend reality to change to be what they want it to be. Sid just does that, but no one remarks on it and no one makes a big deal out of it. And
why
nobody,
would they?
Yeah. Yeah. Why would they? Just crazy. This psychologist who just like is wearing power suits, who is like, so she is equally underdressed for what they are doing. Denzel Washington's in a sweatshirt. She's in shoulder pads. And they're like, "Okay, we have one gun between the two of us. Let's go."
Yeah.
It just makes no freaking sense.
But first, we have to step off, take a 5-minute break for Chekhov's child endangerment.
Oh, my God. They go to the first house.
They
go to the first house. There's, I guess, a cop and an old couple that are murdered there. And then he writes like helter skelter shit on the wall that Charles Manson wrote. And then they go, then they go to her house, which she's like, "I'll only be 5 minutes." And I'm like, "What are you like going to like take a dump? What are you doing?" And then it just pans over to this like suburban home with two children inside. And I was like, "Oh, God damn it."
Here's
the stakes for the end of the movie. Yeah. This child in plastic pants is going to get tied up in a van somewhere. And,
It's a very, very forward kid just sees mom come inside from a car, decides, "Oh, go see what's up," and walks out and just gets in the car and starts talking to the guy in there. Like, what kind of safe world do you live in?
Yeah. Hey, is that a gun? Cool. Can I get in your car?
You know about baseball?
Which is wild to me because I know that area of LA that they filmed that sequence on and where those houses are. And no child would be sitting on the steps of any of those houses.
Well, no, and they shouldn't be in the world that they set up here, because like just outside, like the prison is like just like a massive like homeless encampment. Like, yeah, not that those are unsafe, but like it's been like projected throughout this entire film that this city is a war zone, and that like everything going on is just, you know, it's just hell on earth outside, and there are super earthquakes happening and stuff like that. It's all being like peppered in the background, never really remarked upon, and just crazy shit. And then, you know, this kid just like wanders outside on her own all the time, and you know, the babysitter gets chastised for letting her go outside. Wild.
It's wild.
Yeah. They get back in the car. There's been a call over the radio that there's a hostage situation at a nightclub, and this is when we get to, what is this place called? Jesus. the media club, right? Media zone.
Yeah,
the media zone.
Media zone.
It's, oh my god, so it's a nightclub.
This is great. Yeah. I love this scene.
Russell Crowe goes into, you have to get up through a freight elevator. And it's the most well-lit nightclub because, sure,
yeah, of course.
Why not? You know, that has, I forget who this, is this performer in the middle of the room somebody?
Oh, it's Tracy Lords.
Is it?
Yes.
Because I'm like, this has to be somebody. I can't recognize who it is. But, yeah, it is Tracy Lords. Look at that. Holy shit, dude. Good call.
Yeah.
There you are. Singing a song about, I don't know what, having sex, something like that.
Love, lovey, love.
The human experience.
Sorry, I need to get this right.
Perfect. You nailed it, man.
Yeah.
Wow. One take. Got it. One take, Leonard. That's what they call him. two women in bikinis are filming people on digital cameras that have their feeds hooked into projection screens all around the room with like a rainbow Windows video player MP3, you know, effect. Yeah,
it's super Winamp,
whips the llama's ass. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Russell Crowe loves it. He loves seeing his face up on the screen. And it's just like weird vibe. The instrument is like a Casio mixed with a theremin. It's just orbs you put your hands over and it makes noise. Like this is some like Max Rebo shit going on in this club. Just like a Star Wars level instrument. And
also got the robot bartender too.
That's right. Oh my god.
Robot bartender.
I needed more of that in this movie. We need to see how technology has proliferated throughout LA in this weird way. This bartender who just looks like a, you know, I don't know, a fancy lad bartender, but talks like a cowboy for some reason.
As he must.
Pisses off Russell Crowe because he is an ancestor of his, and he's like, I don't like that. You're making me look bad. So he does some RoboCop gun tricks, which I'm not sure which serial killer knew how to do that, but good on him. Maybe Buffalo Bill. That guy killed a lot of things. And then shoots his robot's head off, and then just holds the place hostage, and then does again, like a Jack Nicholson Joker thing of recording people screaming and saying their different sections of the orchestra. And like when all the women are together whimpering, because they're like just the whimpering section of the orchestra, that was pretty funny. And it's just like sampling them and then playing a song
with all their screams.
Yeah, their screams and whimpers, which is like, it's so radically lame.
Oh, yeah, man.
it's
unbelievable.
Unbelievably lame. But yeah, Len, this is your favorite part of the movie happens right here, right?
Yes. Well, the aftermath of what happens here is actually my favorite part of the movie. But yes, right. there is a guy in a tacky purple suit. Russell Crowe says that he loves it. We fast forward a few scenes. We'll still come back to this, but the guy is being interviewed about it. He's simply in his underwear, and he's like, "This guy stole my suit." And I'm like, coming from the context of the 90s, I feel like that's supposed to imply that this guy was like a football player. If you remember any football player in the 90s going to a function where they were in a suit, they were wearing these jokeler suits.
You're absolutely right. Just the largest, like something Prince would wear.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was great because he said that thing cost me $150.
Yeah.
You know, it's name brand. And I was like, damn, dude, really?
$150 in 99 is a lot.
Yeah, right? Like, I can't even, like, get workwear that cheap. It's crazy. He does his little symphony of screams. He's just popping off people every once in a while. I don't know if Sid caused the gas truck to be sideways on a bridge.
Intelligent. That he planned ahead, yes.
Okay. I didn't know if that was just incidental or not, but so they get waylaid on their way to the club. Denzel decides to hoof it and leave his psychoanalyst partner behind, and runs to the club, goes up the freight elevator, and just opens fire on this guy into a crowd of people.
Oh, yeah.
The amount of times that Denzel just starts firing into a crowd of people. Actually, all the cops in this movie just start firing into crowds of people just constantly.
Yeah.
We'll get into it at the UFC event, but and how their security needs to like lower its budget. Those guys are just too decked out. And then shoots him up. And he does like a backflip over his head into the elevator, and Sid gets away.
While laughing,
of course. Yeah. While jokering. We see him next. He gets away in a cop car, eats a bunch of glass from the dashboard to heal himself. Denzel and, his partner give chase, which is really funny. She like drives up beside him while he's chasing him, right? And you think he would just like hop in and like be firing out the window, but no, she gets out and gets in the passenger seat and she's like, no, you drive. And so it like takes like extra time for him to like, you know, get in the driver's seat and start driving. Just the choices here were very silly. They get to this gas truck. Russell Crowe is holding the suit in one hand, the purple suit he stole, and a gun in the other. Denzel does a power slide and shoots the crowd pleaser, which is a riot shotgun, at Russell Crowe a bunch of times, which does nothing. Russell Crowe jumps off the bridge, gets away, that's the end of that scene.
That is that a vignette.
Gas truck did not blow up.
Nope.
That's a vignette that took place in this movie. Are like strung together by these characters that just happen to be in them.
It's so strange because it feels that way. It feels like this movie got real fucked in the edit because everything just seems like it's hard snap to the next scene constantly. But there is continuity, like Russell Crowe running with that periwinkle suit in his hand and just being like, I got this thing, you know. And it's just like, oh, like they filmed this in that order. They knew he was going to be doing this and have the suit in the next scene, but nothing meshes. It's very, very strange.
Well, I mentioned this in the green room, which is that no one has an arc in this movie. There is no character everyone is a point in space, and then they never connect into a line or anything.
Right.
One another.
Denzel is like the gritty, grizzled, like, you know, burned out veteran cop character at the beginning, and that's exactly who he is at the end. The psychoanalyst is a woman. That's it. That's all we get for her. Sid is just, Sid. That's it. His creator is his creator, is unrepentant to the very end. Just like, yeah, you're right. There is no arc to anyone here. No. Wild.
Which is fairly impressive for a film, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, it's not, I was never bored. This movie kept my attention the entire time. Yeah. It's 106 minutes and it went by really quick. But
yeah, something's always happening.
Yeah. It's, the problem it's moving.
Is, yeah, this is a fun turn off your brain, probably put it on during a party and have like, you know, have it on in the background. But then when we are doing what we do for this podcast, this whole
movie,
like, becomes non-Euclidean geometry.
Becomes the abomination it was always actually.
Between these scenes, we go to the creator of Sid's apartment, who uses a voice command PC, which sounds like hell. Hexagonals, and she's like, next hex, next hex, to like view things. And we get some of, like, I am just asking listeners at home, I don't put out a lot of calls to action, but you just find this scene where it shows the 3D models of all the famous serial killers throughout history.
It's so dumb.
It is. I would have preferred MS Paint level art to what they got going on here. Because it really is like, you know those, like, it's like you go to Dick's Sporting Goods and they have like the punching dummy that's just like this dude that's a big pencil eraser with like a guy's face. Yeah, it's like those, but with different woolly like facial hair drawn on them. it feels like that. Like the Hitler one looks just like shit. The Charles Manson one is even worse. They like try to do his facial hair. The John Wayne Gacy one is just like this horrible three-dimensional clown. And they all shoot lasers out of their mouths through some like barrier, and they're all competing with each other for control. And now there's, that was like the original Sid, and now it's like 200 serial killers all vying for control, including this one they made up, who is a political terrorist, whatever that is. You know, because there's famously apolitical terrorists out there, like the Joker, who just do it for the fun of it.
Never meant anything.
No. He just wants to watch the world burn. Like, you know,
anarchism is not a valid political.
Absolutely
thing.
Not a political party.
Definitely not. Mm-hmm.
my favorite thing about this so-called political terrorist is that his whole thing is of the 1%. Like, oh man, right. The 1%. But he's a spree killer that is like a mass terrorist. Like, he is constantly killing tons of just normal people all at once for no reason.
They said specifically he targets groups that are celebrating democracy.
Yes.
Yep.
Which, what does that mean? Just 4th of July parades?
I was about to say he only commits his murders on the 4th of July.
I was going to say he looks for people with the I voted stickers. But yeah. But he's apolitical. Doesn't mean anything.
He's terrible. Yeah. He also has a really poor. Where were we?
We were jonkling. It was the serial killer database.
Database. That's right.
Yeah.
Should we just say, right now, well, we had some technical difficulties, folks. We'll just put that on the line. One of us got a SID in our systems. It's all figured out now. Don't worry about it.
There's a SID in my boot.
This is a podcast about real boys becoming real boys.
Absolutely.
Now and forever. Yeah.
Now and forever. Someday it'll happen to me. Anyway.
It's the most right thing I've ever heard. Jesus.
Anyway.
Yeah, continue on. Serial killer database.
Serial killer database, beautifully 3D modeled vector graphic serial killers, all projecting light out of their mouth. We already did that. We're talking about the political terrorist.
Yeah.
Who is a socialist who kills cops, which now if this movie came out, that would be your hero character.
Yeah.
Not the cop who just like was going to try to take down the guy trying to take down the one percenter.
Yeah.
I remember what I was trying to get at, which is they establish a weird Batman Joker relationship between Denzel, between Parker and this guy, where he's being interviewed by some news outlet.
Yeah.
Oh, and they're like, hey, serial killer, people think you're a serial killer, but to your fans, you're a hero. He's like 1%, 1% bad. Democracy bad.
Yeah, yeah. And they're interviewing him. I feel like say this is not like an over the phone interview. They're sat down in like an underground bunker with him.
Yes,
they're MTV cribsing him is what they're doing.
This is my bioterrorist bunker.
Yep. This is where we build the bombs. This is where we put all the nails in the pressure cookers. This is where we keep all the dank.
And he has kidnapped Denzel's wife and child. So that's right. What Denzel is there to do is to rescue them. He put them in a room with the bomb, and he also put a sensor right behind the door. So when Denzel opens the door, he blows up his wife and kid himself loses his arm, which doesn't matter until the last 3 minutes of the movie. On a killing spree and tells the reporters to get down as he guns everyone down, including the terrorists. And then the reporters are like, oh man, gotta know what these gunshots are about, and then swing behind Denzel, and he swings around and shoots both of them. And I'm like,
yeah,
not great, but really?
Right. The court convicted a man who had lost a third of his blood, his wife and his child, and an arm, who was killing terrorists, state-labeled terrorists, right?
Yep.
For two civilian deaths who were, I mean, they were embedded with terrorists.
Yeah.
They put away a cop. Like, do you know how fucking hard that is to do? They liked him. They like this cop.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Everyone's he's the best fucking guy out there. We love him. He's the best cop on earth.
Yeah.
But they put him away for life because he shot two people who came up on a, you know, a dying man who was killing terrorists and spooked him. The thinnest premise. Just,
I mean, he did really stretch lady belief. Reporter as a black cop.
You know what?
Yeah.
Like, you there called it, that. Man. America dot, you know, JPG right there. Yeah.
Systemic it's just racism strikes again.
Perfect picture of why he's in jail. Yep.
Would have been it's a hero awful. Otherwise.
I suspect that it's also the reason why there isn't a love story between him and the psychologist.
Yeah, definitely. That's definitely why. Yeah, because Hollywood fucking sucks. But, man.
Mm-hmm.
And when he's in jail, he has, like, you know, hair, you know.
A big fro. Yeah.
He's got, like, dreads, and it's cool as hell. And then as soon as he gets out, all that has to go. No, you need to conform, sir. You need a short haircut. Yeah, just
You're a cop again.
You're a cop again. Yeah, way to go.
Assigned cop at release.
He doesn't even go to regular jail. He goes to medical experiments jail.
He goes straight to let's really fuck this guy up jail.
Yeah, we're gonna give him a Bucky Barnes arm and and then stick him in the virtual reality machine to fight Super Hitler.
Yeah. Just...
yeah. What is your life, man? Anyway,
meanwhile, Sid is at a flea market and is like, "Oh man, they're talking about me. Oh, I love it. I love attention so much because I am very intelligent." And then he's like, "Wait, there's a UFC fight a couple of blocks away. I'm gonna kill this guy first, and no one's gonna literally do anything except film me." No one's even going to confront me. Someone's going to film me. And I'm like, oh, well, that's actually pretty true. Rings true. Mm-hmm. But like no one else reacting to it. And I'm just like, okay, sure, whatever.
Gotta put that shit on WorldStar, man. That's what you do these days. You just film it, put it on LiveLeak, and then that's it. You don't help. You don't do anything. And even like when the cops show up after this dude is dead, like, people are still shopping. They didn't shut down the mall. They didn't do anything. No. There's a man with a snapped neck just like, oh, man. Well, you know, he was kind
capitalism
of a
capitalism gotta
so.
Go. Yeah.
Yeah, it's gotta go. We gotta move these color TVs, man. It's
gotta really sell. Important. Gotta sell a new handset. Yeah, man.
Right. We cut over to the UFC fight because they realize that, oh, he wants a bigger audience. He's gonna kill someone live on TV. And the UFC announcer is making a comment about how the same woman has been on like the Jumbotron and on the like broadcast camera for like 5 minutes straight because everybody in the booth is dead. This becomes Russell Crowe's MO is kill everyone in the like engineering and like production office first and then get all the cameras to do what he wants and then go out on camera.
Which is real goofy at the end of this movie, considering the layout of the production booth in the television studio. It's
really weird. I didn't know that's how TV was shot. We'll get to it. So he's at this UFC fight. He has the camera on this one woman. There's... The sound editing for this scene is really bad. You can't like the crowd seems like it's like an eighth of the size of what it actually is. Everything's just really quiet and muffled and weird. I don't know what the deal is. The people in the ring are just kind of like gently tussling. And everyone's like, it looks like everyone's screaming for bloody murder over the gentle tussling, but, but it is very quiet. It's very subdued. You don't know if it's a main event. It's happening at like 2 p.m. And like, again, it's too well lit for an event like this, kind of just like the media zone. There's just like way too many lights on the crowd. But Sid goes out in the crowd. He makes a move on this lady and is going to like bite her neck or something after throwing her. Throws her boyfriend. Down through the crowd, and then what is he gonna do?
He's gonna Dracula this lady live on TV,
like pretty going much to like bite her neck off on live TV. And I'm like, oh wow, that escalated very quickly.
Yeah,
surface for this one.
Yeah,
Denzel mentioned one of his ways of killing was teeth at the very beginning of the movie.
We were like 0.5 seconds from him using his amorphous android body to give himself like a viper fish mouth and do some real mask shit. But instead,
again,
of course, we are stopped.
should have morphing capabilities, but whatever. And then the UFC security comes out who have pump action shotguns. And there's like six of these guys. They're all like these like workaday fellas, you know, with just like baseball hats on and pump action shotguns. And they blow his hand off and it just goes flying. And he does a like Shaolin jump down to the ring and gets in the arena and everybody's scared of him.
It's even better than that. He does like a frog splash onto the concrete outside of the ring and he's just like, that was wacky. And then he jumps into the ring and he's holding his stump at the fighters and he's like, lick it, lick it. I'm like,
oh,
going on? What is going on?
He's having fun, man. Yeah. Right. Denzel shows up. No, wait. This begins a joke. It's not a joke, but again, a thing in this world that just happens. Denzel asks the guy, "Where is Olympic Auditorium?" And the guy goes, "Oh, about 6 miles east." And I'm like, "East? Like, what do you ride a horse? What fucking year is it? Just tell him what road to take." Like, it was just so weird that this dude knew exactly the physical location of the next place Denzel had to go, then he goes there. And then I was like, oh, that was really, really weird. And then it happens again coming up. And I'm just like, okay, all right, who are these people? And why do they know where everything is so precisely? So Denzel shows up and then just starts firing wildly into the crowd. That's his favorite thing to do is just start shooting his gun at everyone. I don't even know how this one ends. I think he just runs away again, right?
Yeah, he aims at Sid through the chain link fence, and Sid somehow you didn't see me for 5 seconds, so I just disappeared, and then flips over and runs out to the Metrolink, and I'm like, Metrolink, I know where we are. Rubs a stump on some glass and gets his hand back, and then jumps on the train.
Yeah,
right. And then we do this weird subplot of him holding a woman hostage, which mirrors the beginning of the film where he shot through the sushi chef because the sushi chef wasn't real, where Denzel shot through the sushi chef. And Denzel's aiming for his head. He has a laser sight on his gun. He knows that he's going to hit his head, but waits and waits and waits. Then they both shoot. And then the woman's just dead. She's just dead.
Well, here's the thing that happens, which is Sid's holding the woman hostage, and he's got a gun to her back, and he's like, "Don't do it, Parker." But he's goading him into don't try to shoot me. She's gonna die. And I'm okay. Here are the two outcomes, which is you won't shoot Sid, given that he has apparent superhuman abilities and can probably just dodge it. And that woman is going to die anyway. So, hey, don't fire your gun so people don't think that you shot an innocent person.
Right. And then everyone thinks he shot her, even though on scene, the psychiatrist looks like, oh, yeah, there's an exit wound on the front of her. She got shot in the back. And Cochran, this guy's once partner or chief or whoever who's been vouching for him this entire time. He's like, so many people saw him and say that they shot this woman. The attorney general's calling for blood. He's going back to jail. It's just okay. I guess you just let the super Hitler just out and not chase after him anymore with anyone else or any other resources. Yeah. Okay. So they put him in the paddy wagon. They're taking him back to jail. That gets hijacked by Sid, who lets him go.
Yep.
And is like, I'm having too much fun. You can't be locked up. But he says, oh yeah, the thing in your brain is going to kill you if they realize that you're gone. I already killed the guards keeping you here. And if you let yourself go right now, they're just going to blow your head up or whatever. And so he's like, you don't have a choice. You got to play the game. Either way, you come after me or go after them.
Denzel proceeds to make the dumbest decision and not just immediately get on the radio and say, hey, Sid killed all the guards escorting me. I'm here at the transport. Someone come pick me up, please. Instead, it's time to run off to the 405, I guess.
Yeah, just crazy. He's just running away, which is really good because in the next scene they really spray down his face to make him look like he's sweating hard.
Yes.
Just so wet. There's the whole subplot with the neurotoxin thing in his brain that just gets solved really quickly by Cochran going into the control room and throwing a chair through a TV like an Apple commercial.
Yes, and shooting.
He executes the computer.
My favorite part of this is, like, if I just shoot these specific computers, they will never be able to actualize their Suicide Squad.
They will lose the satellite link forever. Nothing else is connected here. It's the brilliant, like, techno-futurism logic of the 1990s. Where it was just like, oh, yeah, no, if the computer's broken, it can't do what you want it to do anymore. That's it. There's no fixing that. They are beyond our understanding. It's very, very stupid. As the psychologist is leaving, Sid shows up at our house in a van, and we're just like, oh, here we go. Time to fridge this kid. They're trying to find the place where Sid is going next. And then there's a television announcement or something about some political... I don't know if it's just a talk show or a debate.
It is a debate about immigration.
Right. Which is like, okay. I don't know if these are politicians or just people here to speak. I don't know. There's just a super Republican and a Native American. Those are the two sides.
And I laughed really hard. I
was like, so on the nose.
But honestly, the most, like, really, the indigenous person is the one defending immigration.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Yeah, really. And he's like, let's talk about some immigrants we all know about, the pilgrims. It was just like that. Like, do you expect this, like, fascist to disappear in a puff of logic because pilgrims were immigrants? No, he wants you dead then and he wants you dead now. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what the hell you say to him. Like, it's just so freaking weird. And then for all his trouble coming on this this program to speak about pilgrims, he catches a bullet in his forehead.
Meaning that Sid is also a racist.
Yep. Yeah, mm-hmm. He's made so many white serial killers. Of course he's racist. Yeah.
Right? Because Sid has taken over the control room, and it's all his now, and he's starting Death TV.
Yes.
Has a really cute little background graphic of, like, little 3D weapons and stuff. I was like, oh, that's kind of fun.
It's like an Inside Edition. It reminds me. Inside Edition so much. But my favorite thing is that Sid has killed everyone in this control room. This control room is three walls and glass. Yeah. And no one saw him murder anyone.
Nope. No one saw anything. He's quiet. Like, we need the scene where, like, he sticks his finger in the control board and nanomachines program all of the Death TV graphics and stuff, because there was a lot of graphic design that happened.
Oh, yeah.
These intros and things that, like, we don't know how any of this is being done. I guess they just had it in B-roll or something. And he's set up a live feed to a little girl, like, trapped in a ventilation system somewhere.
Yeah. Kidnapped.
The daughter, yep, the psychoanalyst's daughter, who she immediately loses her shit and cannot function, because that's her role in this film.
She also does she does literally the Nami help me from One Piece.
which is kind of amazing.
And district attorney has decided that Barnes is the number one threat now, that Parker's the number one threat, and not Sid. Not Sid. He's killed one person, maybe. Actually, it was proved otherwise at the coroner's office, but no one cares. But has sent, like, the literal fucking army, like, all of the LAPD after this guy with fully automatic weapons, and they're like, wait, there he is in this crowded television station, and they all just open up and just it's insane. But right before this is a callback to that, you know, where's Olympic Stadium? Oh, it's like 4 miles east. He's like, where's the television studio? And some dude next to him goes, on the 38th floor, and he goes, thank you, and he just leaves, and that's the scene.
Yeah.
I was like, how do people fucking know all this?
They know. They've got an encyclopedic knowledge of the world around them because they're in the Matrix.
Just people on the street near a big TV know exactly where the recording studio is.
Don't you know the exact floor and room number of every different corporation on your street?
Oh, man. Yeah, on my street? Yes, I do. Absolutely.
Yeah, there's Matt Blacksmith Incorporated. That's right. About it.
And then I think up the hill there's a contractor. And, yeah, it's all first floors, man. It's great.
For whatever reason, Dr. Daryl shows up to this personally, even though he's been hiding in a seedy motel for, like 4 days.
And he makes scrawny guys with big heads like this anymore.
Yeah, well, like, except for Dennis Reynolds. Except for Glenn Howard.
It's real, like, it's Jeffrey Combs energy this guy has. Mm. Yeah.
And and psychologist is like, where's my daughter? And he's like, I don't know. What are you going to do, shoot me? So she pistol whips him. And I'm like, hey. My favorite part about when Denzel is running away from this hail of gunfire is he holds his arm out and I'm like, why is he doing that? And I'm on second watch. I was like, oh, that's right. He's got a robot arm. Yeah. So he's using that to break the glass. But I had no idea the first time because I had forgotten that it was a plot element.
Yep.
Yeah, man. No. It's so useful to have the robot arm. Trust me, he's been using it all film to do things like just break open doors and pick up really heavy rocks with one hand. Like
he punches through a pane of glass in this scene. Yeah,
yeah.
He's to so remind strong the audience, and powerful he has a robot arm. Yeah. Oh my god. He gets up to the studio where all the phone lines have been cut, so Sid is really pissed because he just wants an audience, and the audience needs has been attention. Denied to him.
Yeah.
Yep.
And he was about to execute a guy on live TV before the feed got cut. He's like, hey, how you doing? What's your name? Your name's Ed? You're Ed, right? Yeah, you enjoying the show? And he's like, he's like, and then we do the slightest little bit of hey, guess what? I'm this way not because I want to be, or I was literally made this way, and I was made this way because of all of you, because you like killing all that. And I'm just like, oh man, if only there had been more of this with him like dealing with the concept of like, oh wait, might not actually have to be a serial killer, but nope, I'm actually kind of compelled to be because I was made in a laboratory to be a serial killer.
Well, they also do a thing earlier where he's like, they're saying, oh, he's a child and he's being propelled by these like serial killer personalities, but he is ultimately still a child. And that's why he wants attention and all this other shit. And I was like, reckon with I am like new to this world. Gravity is new to me. Everything is new to me. And it's just, I'm playing and killing people is playing. And then when he realizes that it's not play anymore or something, you know, maybe, I don't know, like there could be something here and they're just, nah.
Nah, why would we?
No, he's the Joker, baby.
Hey.
Denzel once again opens fire into a crowd of people.
Yep, he sure does.
If it works the first time, it's going to work the fifth time.
And then
his lesson when he killed that reporter.
He doubled down. He's doubled down on it every
time. I was right to do it, goddammit.
And then in my favorite effect, Sid flies back first into the drop ceiling.
Yeah.
He fell out of the thing. Just like, what is going, what are the rules of this android, this now machine android body? Because the
rules keep changing through all of it. He just becomes a cartoon character.
Yes.
Very good. They end up on the roof of this television studio. They're jumping around on all these really flimsy ventilation systems. and then they get out on the power window washing rig that like raises and lowers the man lift on the side of the building, which they keep showing the gearing and tracks for the system. And I was like, oh, someone's going to get crushed. This is going to be great. And no, that never happens.
Yeah.
I don't know why they really focused on it. They're like, man, isn't window washing cool, you guys? Does anything, like, I mean, it's the end of every movie. It's two dudes wailing on each other. That is the end of 90% of films. It's just two dudes wailing on each other. I don't think anything particularly fun happens here.
No. Like, no.
The fun is after they're done wailing and the window washing scaffold crashes through the side of the building and Sid goes flying into a bunch of glass and gets cut up real nice.
But glass is vitamins to him. It's good for him.
Glass is vitamins to him. If you took 5,000 vitamin C pills to the face from a cannon, it would still kill you.
Yeah, but before I died, I could piss an orange laser that could cut through granite. So I was waiting for Sid to, like, I don't know, just become this, like, giant nanomachine mass.
Yeah, do a thing.
Yeah, you know, yeah, do something, man.
You know what I was expecting to happen? I thought he was going to starfish himself and literally throw
kids
from all the individual body parts. But no, he's
wondering why that didn't happen. Yeah, because the nano death, if the little cube gets cut off, they established it earlier. Yeah.
No, that would have been so good because he could have split into 200 little Sids, each with a single serial killer's soul living inside it.
Oh my god.
Yeah, like the Charles Manson Sid arguing with all the other serial killers about why he's the better one.
And then the end of this movie is just Gremlins 2.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, oh
but
man.
No, instead, Sid tries to trick Denzel into getting impaled on some glass that's in him, but then Denzel reaches into his brain and rips out the D20 of Hitler. I'm just like, oh, well, that was anticlimactic. And then it's like, oh, yes, that's right, the little girl. We don't know where...
Failed to save her.
Oh, no. Oh, wait. I know. Let's go back to the decommissioned lab and trick Sid into thinking that he's still outside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is where we get the good scene of Denzel running in the VR rig where he's just swinging his arms and legs. It's very, very fun.
He's working so hard.
Mm-hmm. Get the location of the little girl because Denzel gets killed, quote unquote. And then Sid wins and is like taunting the mother with where her daughter is. And then she's like, okay, we got it. And he goes, oh, wait a minute. I'm back in the box. God damn it.
Lower man Denzel because he can get him in time.
Yeah. And then, yeah, the guy who is in charge of the computer graphics just turns everything up to 25 and just, like, you know, just as hard as it can go. Mm. Denzel, yeah, gets lawnmower manned pretty bad. While that's happening, the programmer, the guy who programmed Sid, kills the chief. What was his name there? Cochran, the guy who trusted Denzel. Kills him with, like, a golf club or something that's been sitting around.
Yeah.
And then is going to leave Denzel in there to get cooked. But our psychoanalyst gets a gun and perforates the guy.
Yeah.
And then Denzel, whose brain has been attached to Sid at like 1,000% neuro something or other, like way over the limit, that killed the other guy.
Oh, yeah.
And she just like pulls the helmet off and he's fine. He goes, oh, man, that's it.
He's built different.
He's just built different. He got good brain. And like I was like, oh, what if like Sid's inside him and like, you know, whatever. Yeah, that
would be interesting, and this movie cannot have an interesting climax.
No.
No, instead what this movie has is, oh man, those ventilation shafts that we were fighting on. she never made any noise, but she's in one of them.
Yeah.
Sid
could have been screaming the whole time.
Yep. Sid booby trapped it exactly the same way as the guy who killed my wife and daughter. I will go through the top. No, there are fan blades. How will I ever get through? Oh, that's right. I've got a robot arm. Done.
Yeah.
And then
Yeah, right. Literally.
Just and sticks then, his arm in a fan. That's what the robot arm was for the entire time, was to stop a fan.
Yep.
Yep.
And then I thought we were going to have something interesting where Sid had, like, duplicated himself as the bomb and was taunting him. But no, it's just a recorded message.
Yeah.
Also, I don't know how Denzel disarmed the bomb at the end of the day, other than he pulled a tube out of his robot arm.
Yeah.
And connected something.
Right.
He
pulls a glowing tube out of his robot arm, and he guessed. Like, it's showing him guessing for a very long time. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing here. I guess I'm just going to guess. And it's like our hero, ladies and gentlemen, just has not been competent at anything he's done. Able to chase this dude because he's leaving like a bloody wake behind him. Yeah. And now, like, when he's faced with like his biggest challenge, he's like, I'm just gonna wing it.
Only he had the robot arm with the special wiring.
Yeah, only he has the robot arm.
He puts the SID recording like, on.
I don't know if you guys have been near industrial fans. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I don't know if you've been near industrial fans. I've been near a lot of industrial fans in my life. They just have a power box on the side that you turn off when you're maintaining them.
Yeah.
It's just one, it's really brightly labeled switch, says on off. You just turn it off. No. It's fine. Yeah.
Sid would have booby trapped that too if we turned off the fan. Then
I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they let the little girl out. Everyone's reunited.
Yeah.
And then we get the most, like, coming soon to DVD music at first. It's like really like bam 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 bam. It's just like, it's just crazy hard cut to this music, which stops 30 seconds in to play a Peter Gabriel song called, like, what is it? The Party Man?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is Party Man. And we just get the soft, gentle, adult contemporary beats of Peter Gabriel whisking us away out of the world of virtuosity.
As Denzel throws the devil's D20 off
the heart of the ocean into the...
Yes.
Yep.
Mm.
And that's...
I thought it'd be really funny if he put the cube in prison.
Yes.
But no, he just throws it off a building.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what would have made this movie like 10 times better and made Denzel's like very awful standoffish character reasonable? If instead of them putting him in the machine, he had just been there the entire time and was constantly chasing Sid in a weird virtual world that didn't feel real or right, and that's what he had been doing in his prison sentence. And then when they let him out, and they're like, no, you were in a, like a virtual simulation for like the last 4 years, actually. And then he's like, oh, and then his entire attitude makes sense, actually. By the way, I realized I was looking at the filmography of the director, one Brett Leonard. Once again, Leonard's getting fucked over in media. He also directed The Lawnmower Man, so he does literally get Lawnmower Man.
Oh my god, he does do The Lawnmower Man.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh wow, he also directed Man Thing, the 2005's Man Thing.
Oh boy. That. Cult classic, Man Thing.
A later Highlander sequel. I really like that. Wow. All right, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that was virtuosity. Oh, this director was also an actor in Killer Clowns from Outer Space. Anyway. Yeah. Weird. What is my world? Virtuosity, everybody.
It's
what
something.
Can you say? 2.5 out of 5.
Yeah, perfectly 2.5 out of 5. Because as mentioned, didn't feel as long as it is.
No.
No, it doesn't.
It just goes by.
Would I ever watch this film again? No. No, no, no. No. If this was on like TV on a Sunday afternoon and I saw it, I'd be like, I don't need to watch TV today. it's
TV at home.
It's a weird one, and it's like, yeah. It's a weird one. It kind of like, I don't know. You can see like other people took a lot from this, but on its own, it is, man, I don't know. I don't know what they were trying to do here. It only made $7 million at the box office. So I think everybody else felt it was a 2.5 out of 5. So that's it, everybody.
Yeah.
Good one.
Congratulations. Yeah.
You can find us at monsterdeer.monster. All four of us regular hosts are on Blue Sky. You can
easy to find.
I think our handles there, and I think in the podcast notes maybe.
Yes.
And boy oh boy. Next week, I believe, or next episode is,
yeah,
are we announcing it? Are we gonna announce what it
yeah,
is?
Yeah, let the people know. They can research. It's time for the Bye Bye Man.
Yeah, you can think it. You're allowed to say it. The Bye Bye Man is coming up. We're finally doing it. it is the beginning of our March Madness, where
much
we
requested.
Drive each other insane with the much requested worst film we could ever cover. Although, I mean, that's hot. That's debatable. I've brought some real pipe and hot
There's
trash.
There's been some rough
podcast,
stuff.
So.
Moonsharks is way up there.
We'll see how it goes.
No, I know the fact that Shark's Eye of the Moon is actually better than the Bye Bye Man.
Oh man.
Seen the Bye Bye Man.
Damn.
I've got a good week coming
All right.
up then.
Cool.
Oh, boy.
I can't wait. Oh, this is gonna be good. This is gonna be so good.
Could always be worse. Right.
I mean, what can you say to lead us out of this?
Time to delete myself.
Monster Dear Monster is brought to you by Fireheart Media. If you enjoyed the show, please share this and all of our episodes with friends. And remember to rate and review us on your podcast platform of choice. Word of mouth is the only way we grow. If you like, you can also kick us a few bucks to help us keep the lights on at ko-fi.com/Fireheart Media. Check out our other show, Jolichon's Place, at www.jolichon.place.